didn't bother whittling the walls into a fine polish. This space is exactly what is required. Nothing more. A crater-sized arena to throw fists and split skin. To break bones and fray feral tendencies before they grow their own blood-letting pulse. Stepping down into the sand peppered with grains of iron, the voices in my head extinguish like a blown flame. I make for the arena's epicenter, the doors thumping shut, followed by the sound of Grimm removing his boots. I stretch my arm across my chest, then the other. The fine scabs that had begun to form on some of my wounds reopen with the motion, warm blood slicking down my torso and dripping onto the sand. I'm not in the mood to hold back, I rumble, spinning. Grimm's jacket is on the ground by his boots, head dipped as he loosens the strings on his black tunic before pulling it over his head, exposing his back, his pale flesh a puckered mess. Like it melted, got stirred up, then abruptly solidified. He begins to turn, and I look away. Neither am I, he grates out, and it's a battle to keep my face stony, to contain my shock at the sound of his voice. Its coarse texture, a tribute to how little he uses it. He stalks toward me, looking at me from behind the flop of snowy strands half concealing his face, broad shoulders flexing as he fists his hands at his sides. Good, I growl, then charge. We collide in a clash of white-knuckled blows that break more than they build, our blood spraying the sand as we exert the menace from our systems in the only way either of us understands. Fists to flesh. Snarl to bloodlusting snarl. Rage to fucking rage.
Veya. Chapter 47. Agni closes the wooden shutters, blocking out most of the light while I drape Elowyn atop the large pallet in one of the many guest suites, placing her lax hands upon her chest. Pausing, I take in the ravaged skin down the sides of her nails, my brows pinching together. Interesting. Either a bad habit, or she's lusting over the thought of having someone's blood on her hands. Wonder which it is. I pull the silk sheet up to her chin, sweeping a tendril of freshly brushed hair from her now-healed brow. Not even a trace of a scar she would have forever worn like a fucked-up version of the diadem she once bore. You did well, I tell Agni, who dips her head in thanks, pausing by the end of the bed. Gaze caught on Elowyn, she chews her bottom lip, fingers nodding, like she's deliberating. Something the matter? Yes. She looks at me, slowly filling her lungs. There's something I didn't want to bring up in front of the males, mostly because they seemed on edge. Didn't want to add fuel to the flames, so to speak. So she's telling the one who threw herself across the table and punched the king 3 times before she was manhandled into submission? Nice. I mold myself into a vision of poised composure and say, go ahead. Her cheeks flush. The patients, as you know, the gift of dragon sight runs thick in my family line. So once the blood was cleansed from her skin, I could see the layered stain of many runes. Many, many runes. I frown, looking at Elowyn. Recent? It's hard to tell. Agni makes her way around the pallet, peeling back the sheets. But she has one wound that doesn't appear to have been mended by runes. It glows a shade of silver I've never seen before. Right here, she says, placing her hand directly over Elowyn's heart. My blood chills. A killing wound, she continues. Not one folk survive, since healing a stab to the heart takes more time than the patient usually has. All the heat drains from my face. Creators. I swallow the thickening lump in my throat, rubbing my hands down my cheeks, threading my fingers through my hair. Don't tell the king. Not until we know why. Or how. Agni's face blanches, stare flicking to the door at my back, to me again. She drops into a swift curtsy, clears her throat, then turns her attention back on Rave. Frowning, I look toward the door, moving out into the hallway just in time to see a shirtless Pyrok disappear around the corner at the far end. I sigh. Charging forward, I spill into the sitting room and cut my gaze across the cluster of coke leather cedars curled around a low stone table that's seen more games of Scrippy than there are stars in the southern sky. Pyrok sprawled across a large cedar, his long, disheveled hair the same blazing hue as the flame dancing between his fingers.
"Don't tell the king, huh?"
he says, condemning me from beneath raised brows. "Don't look at me like that," I mutter, stalking toward the opposite cedar and dumping myself on it. He's so fucking happy to have her back, he's not asking nearly enough questions. Besides, you don't slaughter your enemies with a blunt blade. You sharpen it until it's so honed you're certain it'll do the job. Pyrok flicks the flame from one hand to the other like a ball, its illumination casting his face in fierce, angular shadows.
"What do you know?"
"That Elowin was stabbed to death, contrary to the story we were all spoon-fed like younglings desperate for a scrap of sustenance."
"Let me rephrase,"
Pyrok says with a roll of his emerald eyes.
"Is whatever you do know going to lead us to war with our fledgling army?"
I shrug. He curses, squashing the flame in his fist, fingers still steaming as he runs them through his hair.
"For someone who's never officially been to war, you're incredibly hungry for it."
"What have we been preparing for all these phases if not to swipe the filth from the board and undo all of Pa's hard, bloody work?" Tucking one leg beneath myself, I pivot, unlacing my leather vest from where it's threaded down my front and sides. I loosen it, pull it over my head, then lift my loose brown tunic, exposing the ancient fire lash marks I know make a damn good mess of the pretty skin on my back. "You know I didn't keep these because I like the look of them," I say, tossing him a backward glance, though he keeps his eyes on my scars, stare bouncing from one deep, mangled slash to the next. "I kept them so that every time I look in the mirror, I'm reminded of why Tyroth and Kadok need to rot." Nothing quite like winning your own Tuca trial, then being scored to shreds by your own blood for soiling the family name. "Yes, I'm war hungry. I've earned that right. 78 times, to be exact." Pyrok clears his throat, dropping his gaze as I spin, wiggling my tunic back into place, not bothering with my vest. "I didn't get to rip off Pa's head," I mutter, reaching for the mug of brandy and tipping myself a glass. "I'll rip off theirs."
"Well, let me know if you want me to fry their cocks."
"Maybe. See how I feel at the time." I jerk my chin at the stack of Scrippy cards and the 8-sided dice tucked in a tall clay mug beside it. "Dealas."
"I hate when you're bossy,"
he groans, sitting up and reaching for the deck, swiping away some of the thickening tension.
"If I don't boss you around, nobody will. As it is, you're about as useful as a pretty mead-stained floor rug." "Pretty, you say? Fuck me,"
he boasts, chest puffed, elbows on his spread knees as he leans forward and shuffles.
"I'm flattered."
"Course you are." He winks, dealing the hard parchment shards,
I snatch each one that slides onto the table before me. Features smooth as silk, despite my delectable hand. This game loves me. I don't want to play for gold. I've got enough gold. I fan my deal, reordering them from best to worst, left to right. I want to play for favors. Pyrox snort laughs.
Take it you've got the moon plume?
Don't know what you're talking about. I purr, batting my lashes at him. He cuts me a dry look, then lays the rest of the deck around the board that never leaves the table. That's absorbed more spilled molten mead than Pyrox, and that's saying something. My role, I say, reaching for the cup containing the dice. Since your face annoys me.
You said I was pretty.
Yeah. I toss the dice across the table, rolling a 6, picking the 18th shard from the far left corner. Choosing to add the spangle to my deck, I set my Salmoth face down on the empty spot. Pretty annoying. Pyrox chuckles, shaking his head. He throws the dice, picking up a shard he ponders, the smile smoothing from his face.
Grim, seen your scars?
Course not. Why? He slides the shard into his fan, placing another in its spot on the grid.
Just wondering. Don't tell the king what?
Not telling. And if you try to pry the information from poor, vulnerable Agni with your charm stick, I'll murder you in your sleep.
The fucked up thing is, I actually believe you,
he mutters, and I cut him a sharp smile. Gone the next second. I roll the dice again, picking up the hushling, face stony as I say, Elowen used to keep a diary, you know. I once caught her tucking it into a hole in the wall. In the suite she's sleeping in right now, actually.
What's that got to do with anything?
Pyrox asks, pouring himself a glass while I deliberate what to trade out. Never felt important before, I shrug, placing the Huggin face down on the empty space on the grid. Does, now.
Okay, well, where is it?
He scoops the dice into the cup and rolls a 7, though he's swift to discount the card he picks and leaves it face down on the grid. Think she took it back with her to Erythia, I mumble, rolling a 2, this time picking up the molten maw. Luck, it seems, is licking my ass.
Over 100 phases ago,
he says with a thick tone of sarcasm I certainly don't appreciate.
It's probably dust.
It's cold there. I watch him over my fan of shards, holding his stare as I set the flotty face down on the empty spot. Perfect atmosphere for preservation. He looks at me like I'm daft, which we both know is far from true.
Think you can visit Tyroth and not cut off his head, forcing your only decent brother into a war that starts off on the back foot?
He slams a shard on the table, and I frown at the thieving Woto leering at me from the painted side. Cute. He thinks he's got tricks. I'm not that irresponsible. I ease my hand forward so he can blindly steal whatever shard he wants, smirking when he plucks the fog slug from the far right. And you're incredibly shit at this game. He scowls down at the shard, growling as he threads it into his fanned hand.
I hate playing with you. I've watched you play over your shoulder before. You usually stack your good shards from the right to the left.
Exactly why I stacked them left to right, I tell him, draining my glass before thumping it on the table. Scrippy.
Already?
Want me to say it louder?
No,
he mutters, slamming down the saber scythe I trump with my moon plume, all the colors leeching from his shard, like the saber scythe just perished.
Fucking knew it.
I set my cork down, but he trumps it with a velvet trog, also winning the following stomp when his miscon trumps my enthu. Perhaps high on the smell of impending victory, he slams down the doom quill I'm quick to trump with my hushling before I slap my molten maw on the final slot, knowing there's nothing left in the deck for him to beat me with. You lose? I fill my glass and kick back in the cedar, taking a deep draw, the brandy casting a fiery trail down my throat, my next breath hissed through clenched teeth. I reserve my right to a favor, to be used at a later date.
I'm never playing with you on my own again.
He flops back on the cedar, using his bent arm as a pillow.
It's not so bad when you beat me and Grimm at the same time.
He spits a word beneath his breath that peels a whip of flame from one of the sconces. It flits into his hand, where he twirls it between his fingers like a slithering snake. I look to the ceiling, the pretty bronze, black, and red tiles making up the face of Pa's snarling saber scythe, Gron, constantly staring down at us, constantly judging my indiscretions. Or so Pa used to say when he discovered I was fucking one of the hutchkeepers after I'd given myself to the creators to escape any future Tuca trials. He called it unbecoming, disgraceful, embarrassing. He also said Ma would be devastated to know she died giving birth to such a filthy whore. I called it sweet, pleasurable revenge and decided Ma would have smiled at me, given me a pat on the head, and told me I could fuck whoever I felt inclined to fuck. Or nobody at all, if that's what I wanted. Hard to know for sure since I never met her, but she made me. And I like to think I inherited all my fabulous traits from her. Certainly not the asshole who sired me. Guess I'm going to the shade, I mutter, drawing another deep sip of my drink, the liquid burning a spicy trail down my throat, heating my belly. Yay for me. Wanna come?
Shit, no.
I could make you, I drawl, lifting my glass above my head, closing one eye to look at Gron through the fractals, the menacing fucker. Call on the favor, I just won.
You're not that cruel.
He's right. I'm not. Unfortunately. Sighing, I turn the glass, further fragmenting Gron's horrific face, remembering the way Pa used to cue him to chase folk across the plains if they displeased him in any way. I shiver.
You're not gonna wait until Elowin wakes? Reintroduce yourself?
Haven't decided. What I mean to say is that I don't trust myself not to rip at her the same way I ripped at Khan, despite the unrecognition and confusion I'll undoubtedly receive. What she did was in many ways completely unforgivable. Perhaps the diary will shed some light on the black hole she punched through my heart when she left without a word to me and a single pathetic note to the male she supposedly loved. Diary entry. Elowen Nevan, age 18 phases, 5,039 phases after stone. I was singing to Slatra while I dozed amongst her fluffy tail when the gates were suddenly lifted by the guard standing watch over the hutch. Through the door, the biggest saber scythe I've ever seen entered, sponging the light. A male climbed down off the beast's back, tall, broad, beautiful. Creators, he was beautiful. There was something about the way he moved that made me picture a mountain crumbling. He looked right at me through eyes like crackling embers, and I think my heart stopped. His feet stopped, too. That moment seemed to go on, and I almost begged Slatra to lift her wing and cut it off. Give me something to hide behind so I could catch my breath. She didn't, though she did lift her head and growl in the direction of the massive dragon looking at us like we were in its sleep space. To be fair, that's probably correct, but this hutch is the only one Slatra was able to access in her injured state.
I didn't bother to put my veil on. The male had already seen my face, and the ether stone latched upon my brow like the disease it is. He coaxed his beast back from the burrow, though he returned a while later without his dragon. This time, Slatra didn't growl. He stole steps toward us, asking what happened to Slatra's eyes, his voice so rough and thick and accented that I almost couldn't understand his words, wondering how often he spoke. By the looks of all the scars on his arms, I've decided he spends most of his time screaming, not speaking. He inquired about the last time I ate, if I was living down here. I didn't respond to any of his questions, not because it's forbidden for me to speak with strangers, but because I simply didn't have it in me. I'm tired. Tired of losing things I love. Tired of trying to rip this stupid diadem off my brow so I can wield the power I need to get Slatra home and take my throne from the asshole who thinks he owns me. Tired of being spoken down to by males who believe they know what's good for me and my kingdom I miss so much, now being run by a cruel, selfish, greedy male I wouldn't trust with my worst enemy. I'm just tired. Rave. Chapter 49. A scalding word burns hot on my tongue, sputters against my lips, hopelessness stomping me like a world lumped on my chest. There's an ache in my heart that's leaking. Leaking. I think I'm leaking with it, reaching for something I can't grasp, fingers outstretched, desperate to tangle with something important, something mine. But I drain, drain, gently drain away, yanked away too fast, too slow, cold, empty. Jerking up, I battle for breath, clawing at my chest, ribs, and belly, trying to untangle from the tacky tendrils of a slumber terror that felt too real, too painful. I slap my face, open my eyes, taking in the humid room, shards of light peeking through shuttered curtains I think I might have seen before, somewhere, perhaps in a dream. But I'm not dreaming anymore. I just woke. I just woke. Where the fuck am I? I thread my fingers through my hair and push it back off my face, trying to piece together the bloody segments of my mulched memories. The fate herder. The kneeling, motionless colt leaking blood from its slit throat. Two unfamiliar males slashing each other's flesh, trying to claim the rights to my body. Hawk's fist colliding with my face. Khan decapitating Hawk. Khan. Gasping, I reach for the Malmer hanging heavy from my neck and cradle it in my palm, admiring the two embracing dragons. Creators. That happened. That actually happened. Shit, I mutter, cutting my gaze around the room again. The walls all made from russet stone, the ceiling a mosaic clash of black, bronze, and dark red. The space is sparsely furnished, most things grown from the wall or floor. The massive pallet, the twin side tables, the dresser protruding from the far wall packed with woven baskets used as drawers. Light, simple, organic. I glance down, seeing my attire has been changed, brushing my fingers across the black silk shift, buying me all the modesty I could hope for in this oppressive heat. A good sign that accepting Khan's Malmer is not going to lead me to a life on my back, staring up at stitched-together hides while I grow some mystical offspring meant to save the world from impending moonfalls. This is good. I can work with this. I let the Malmer thump against my chest, shove the sheet off, and push to a wobbly stand, my stare landing on a gold and copper-framed body-length mirror mounted to the wall. I frown at the image of myself staring back. The black sleep shift spills off my curves, the neckline draped across my full bust, the hem falling to mid-thigh and baring my long, pale legs. The sheath is a perfect match to the tone of my loose hair that's cloaking me like a sheet of silk, falling all the way to my hips in long, ruffled tendrils. Somebody washed me, dressed me, and brushed my hair. Not sure what I did to deserve such service. I step closer, hands lifting to my face, noticing my cheeks are flushed pink from the heat, my lips a deeper tone of red. My body's so unattuned to this oppressive temperature that all my capillaries appear to be working overtime. Tipping my head to the side, I ease my thick, heavy locks away from the dull throb in my temple, fingers skating over the unblemished flesh. My frown deepens. Not a single scar paying tribute to the mace that cracked me open. Huh. Khan must have organized a rooney to thread me back together. That's nice. Fine treatment for a prisoner still bound in an iron shackle. Not that I'm complaining. Pretty sure one more smack to the skull would have been the end of me. I turn away, am about to move to the shutters so I can see where in this creator's forsaken world I've ended up, when a vision flashes, striking me like another blow to the head, making me feel like the world's tipping, plummeting. I grip the burnished mirror, easing it to the side, revealing a hollow cavity in the stone behind. I thread my arm into the hole, pulling out a leather-bound book I tug close to my chest. The memory disintegrates, like crumbling dirt sifting through the gaps between my fingers, refusing to clump back together again no matter how hard I try to fist them into shape. My heart lodges so far up my throat it's hard to breathe past. What the fuck was that? Swallowing, my gaze drifts back to the mirror, an unsteady hand extending toward the frame and gripping tight. I slide it right, and my heart dislodges from my throat, then whumps into my gut when I see a rough-hewn cavity. Empty. Big enough to fit a book and not much else. My blood turns to a thick, icy sludge. The door behind me snicks shut, and I whip around, letting go of the mirror. The heavy thing scuffs back into place as I take in the female leaning against the door, one leather boot kicked back. She uses a small dragon scale blade to slice crisp, milk-colored shards off a round black fruit, biting into them, zesting the air with tart sweetness. The female's skin is sun-kissed, her long hair full of body and a warm shade of brown, threaded with natural highlights that complement her ember eyes. It's braided on one side, decorated with brown beads. Freckles dust her nose and cheeks, a roguish elegance to her shapely stature that's hard to look away from. She's fiercely beautiful, exuding an aura of confidence that's palpable in this small, stuffy room. Who are you?
Khan's asshole sister you don't want to get on the wrong side of, she says, lashes lifting as she gives me a once-over, then goes back to slicing her fruit, crunching through its watery flesh. My stomach rumbles, clenching around its hollowness, eyes narrowing on the blade, becoming primally aware that this prickly female has a weapon, and I absolutely do not. You don't like me, I muse, edging right to rest my hip against the side table. She doesn't shift her gaze from the fruit as I grip the unlit sconce, tall, gold, and heavy enough to knock somebody unconscious with minimal effort. Precautions. You don't even know me.
Debatable.
I arch a brow. Meaning?
Her lashes flick up, that sharp stare scraping across my face, down to the Malmer resting between my breasts, bowing the silky material into the generous dip.
That means something, you know. You don't just accept one, then toss it in your jewelry box to wear with your favorite outfit.
Joke's on her, because I have no outfits. Her gaze meets mine again, and she bites into another segment of fruit, chewing it while I chew on the way she's looking at me, seeping enough hostility to make me feel utterly unwelcome. Perhaps if she saw the way Khan sawed off Hawk's head while the male was still well and truly conscious, she wouldn't be so concerned about me hurting his precious heart. Where is he? She swallows her mouthful, slicing another segment free. Probably getting threaded back together. He got pretty messed up trying to save you from a life on your back, tits out with a belly full of some brute's babe. My other brow lifts. Let me guess, she continues, piercing the tip of her blade through the milky shard as she pops her hip against the door, looking me up and down, flourishing the weapon about like a pointer stick. He took you to a quaint hut in the hills, cooked you a meal, then looked at you like he loves you more than life itself. So you ran away, fell down the waterfall, and ended up being stripped in a skull full of half-naked warriors. All the blood drains from my face. How do you know? Because I'm magnificent. I'm also loyal, but intolerable when you get on my bad side. She brings the blade to her mouth and snatches the piece of fruit with her teeth, chewing through it. I'm yet to decide where you fall. Unfortunately for her, I don't draw self-gratification from the acceptance of others. Not to mention, I'm so fucking hungry, I could eat a large mound of those strange, juicy orbs of fruit, and hearing her crunch through its crispy, tart-smelling flesh is stirring a feral amount of jealousy I'm struggling to tame. I've never tasted one of those before, but the tingling nerves beneath my tongue are ready. You'd be amazed at how little that bothers me, I mutter, tortured through another crunchy bite that almost has me leaping across the room and knocking the female out just to steal what's left of it. If you're done pissing circles, feel free to show me the exit so I can exercise my newfound liberty of no longer being chained, bound, or pinned. I shoo her with my hand, but she just stares at me, head cocked to the side as she chews her fruit. Khan was brought up constantly being told he's not good enough. He'll never admit it, but in his mind, he doesn't deserve the honor of that being around your neck, she says, waving her blade in the direction of Khan's Malmer. I don't think she gets it. Desperate times, and all that. He's probably looking forward to getting it back. Wearing a sharp smile, she says, Break him again, and I'll break you. She shoves off the door and swings it wide, fluidly stalking down the hall while her last words sink their teeth into my brain and gnaw. What do you mean, again? I snarl, stalking to the doorway, still white-knuckling the candlestick. She keeps walking, just turning the corner at the end of the hall when a word bludgeons up my throat unchecked, my mouth shaping the sound as if from muscle memory alone. Veya! She stops, head turning. Slow. Precise. Her wide-eyed stare collides with mine like salt to a raw, vulnerable wound that's not on my body but within, on a portion of the shore lining my icy internal lake that's not as high as it was before, that's dropped a foot, leaving a ring of ebony stones achingly bare. Maybe I'm seeing things? Maybe it was always like this? What did you just call me? Frowning, I rub my head, wondering who I'm confusing her with. Somebody, surely. Do I know Aveya? I must. Nothing. I don't know. Go away. You're hurting my head. My body must have gone into starvation mode, restricting blood flow to all my important bits. Damn, I need food. And water. She storms back down the hall, her eyes blazing embers. Tossing the core of her fruit on the ground, she bashes her hand against her chest as she bellows, I'm Veya. Me. Do you remember me? My eyes almost roll out of my head. Not this again. No. My brain just belched in the right direction.
I've never seen you before in my life, I mutter and slam the door in her face, clunking the lock into place. Let's chat again when you've learned how to share. There's the sound of her boot colliding with the wood before she belts at the top of her lungs. I'm going to work this out. You hear me? I'm going to work this out. She's nuts. You do that, I mutter. Careful not to strain your brain. The only response is the sound of her footsteps stomping down the hall. Away. I sigh, toss the candlestick on the pallet, and move toward the wooden shutters, sliding them aside and half blinding myself in the process. I lift my other hand as a shield from the fierce ray of light and heat, eyes widening when they finally adjust to the stark glare. Wow, I whisper, gripping the rustic wooden handle on the door before me, shoving it wide. I step out onto the small stone balcony that overlooks a civilization crammed upon a vast bay that stretches into the powdery horizon, its borders smudged by rippling heat waves. A shame, since something about the western point piques my interest, makes me want to peel back the layers of distortion and see what's hidden beneath. I look directly toward the city below. From up here, partway up the swooping cliff, the buildings look like a tumble of rust-colored boulders, some paved in mosaic swirls, others capped with round windows that glint in the sun. The pale blue sky is heavy with dusky saber-scythe moons, as well as a few colorful molten maw moons reflecting in the silky turquoise water that stretches into oblivion, the blazing sun perched directly ahead, lathering me in heat. I draw my lungs full, shaking my head. Looks like I made it to Dom. Rave. Chapter 50. I rummage through the woven baskets to discover a pair of black knee-high boots with thick soles and laces down the front. Tugging them on, I find they fit and immediately fall in love with them. Perfect for tucking blades down and stomping toes. I pull out a bundle of sheer black fabric from a different basket, unraveling it, and discovering it's actually a hooded robe. Huh, I say, tugging it on, checking myself in the mirror, turning left and right. This is adorable. I can still see my silky sheath beneath, giving a layered effect that also doubles as my own portable slab of shade that doesn't restrict the airflow to my body. I admire the floor-length hem and the bell sleeves that almost fall to the tips of my outstretched fingers, a convenient length to mostly hide my cuff so I don't look like an escaped convict while I'm traipsing through the city, hunting for a curly quill. In the same drawer, I find some pants that look too small, but I yank the black belt free and bind it around my waist, discovering it fits if I thread it all the way to the final hole. I flick up the hood, look at my reflection again, and smile. Perfect. Grabbing the candlestick, I charge from the room, down the hall that spills into a domed sitting room. I frown up at the ceiling, a mosaic saber side that looks like it's about to blow flames all over me. A shiver skitters all the way to my toes. Khan needs to fire the decorator before somebody dies of a heart attack. I cut my glance around, a third of the wall a stretch of glass doors with tawny window panes, looking out on a paved courtyard buttoned with a fire pit. Massive urns spill plush vines that appear to clothe the building, heavy with inky flowers the size of my head, their faces tipped to the sun. The room itself has a cozy feel, despite its horrific ceiling art. More urns gushing vines that smother the internal walls, drenched in sunshine pouring through the many windows, those inky blooms flavoring the air with a spicy sweetness. Around a stone table no taller than my knee, and sitting atop a curl of plush leather cedars, are two large males, one with his body facing me, his expression hidden by a flock of pale locks half covering his eyes. The other watching me over his shoulder, brow arched, his face and shoulders covered in freckles, a blaze of hair making him look like he just woke from a midday nap. Both of them wield a fan of scrippy shards, with more face down on the table, also adorned with a glass of amber something and a dish of crispy-looking nibbles. Love that game, I say, striding toward the table, pausing to pinch a snack from the dish. I drag it through a swirl of pale dip and sweep it onto my tongue, scrunching my face at the creamy concoction threaded with notes of something that tastes a lot like dirt. Not my favorite. What is it?
Trufflin cream.
The red-haired, heavily pierced male croaks.
We import it from a nearby village. The fungus that goes into it is hard to grow, so it costs its weight in gold.
I swipe the rest onto my tongue, confirming it is, in fact, terrible. Definitely not my favorite. I toss the crisp into my mouth and chew, brows bumping up. You've redeemed yourself. These are delicious. Rich, salty, fatty. They even pop against my tongue with each bursting bite. I crunch through another. What are they?
Fried coke fat.
Huh. Not my snack of choice since I just watched one bleed into a bowl, but beggars can't be choosers. I scoop the entire dish against my chest and wrap my shackled arm around it, the one still gripping hold of my stolen candlestick. I pluck out another crisp of fat, crunching through it. You don't mind, do you? I ask, pointing at the bowl.
Not enough to stop you,
the shirtless male says, his raised brow inching up his head until it's almost lost amongst his rebellious locks.
Do you want a bag for the candlestick?
I smile. How thoughtful. Yes, I'd love one. He shares a look with the quiet male and stands, wanders over to a drink bar, grabs a thin cotton bag, and empties a bunch of dimpled orange fruit on the bench. He lumbers back toward me, opening it. I drop the candlestick inside, and he threads the handles over my arm. Thank you. I look between them both. You don't need me to kill anyone in exchange for it, do you? Silence prevails for so long, I almost repeat the question.
No. We'll pass,
the red-haired male says. Nice. And strange. That's usually how it works. Let me know if you change your mind. I'm trying to get out of conscription work, but your king saved my life a couple of times, so I'm happy to offer a one-time-only favor. I hoist the bag farther up my shoulder. Where's the front door? The male on the cedar continues to stare at me like I'm some strange creature he's never seen before. His complexion so wan, I wonder if he's coming down with something. Poor guy. Probably best I leave before I catch it too. Else I'll never make it back to the wall to flay Rex Zaros from cock to throat. The redhead points behind me.
That way. 18th door on your right is the fastest route to the city center.
I turn, seeing a hallway I hadn't noticed earlier, lined with windows, beams of light shooting through. So helpful. I pinch another crisp from the bowl cradled against my chest and spin, tossing both males a wave with the same hand. Nice chatting with you. Have a great life. Silence chases me as I saunter down the hall, gorging on fried fat and the glory of being free. Supposedly. I didn't wake in a cell, strung up, or in a dragon's mouth. Nobody's called me a filthy null or made my stabby hand twitch too much. I didn't get tackled to the floor the moment I stepped free of my suite, painted in the blood of a sacrificial beast, or tied to a stick and offered to the Sabersides. Nobody called me Kolu, or ordered me to stay and breed some world-saving offspring, nor am I being herded by a mythical silver feline. I'm cautiously optimistic that my short stay in Dom is going to be far less traumatic than I was previously anticipating. Two large, stony-faced guards grip the handles of the double doors and pry them open. Creators, I mutter, squinting against the overwhelming flood of sunlight. I pluck the last crisp from my dish, crunching through it as I step out into the sticky, sweet-smelling heat, drawing my lungs full, blowing out a sigh. Freedom tastes like fried coke fat and too hot air, but I've never been more thankful. The only thing that could blunt my whetted optimism is a large, scarred, ember-eyed king who sawed off somebody's head for me. My heart squirms, like it's trying to burrow between my ribs, a feeling I want to crush in my clenching fist. The quicker I get out of here, the better. The door snips shut behind me, and I spin, a different set of guards bracketing the doorway on this outside wall catching my attention. I take in their dragon scale armor, the way both males wear their dark hair loose around their shoulders, each armed with a bronze sword in one hand and a wooden spear in the other. Sucking the last of the salty seasoning off my fingers, I step close to the male on the right, somehow not squinting or sweating despite the violent sunlight pouring upon his face. "Would you mind holding this for me?" I ask, nudging my empty dish toward him. A line forms between his brows, and he glances at the pendant hanging against my sternum, brows bumping up. He dips his head for a few long beats, like a bow, then looks up at the clay dish. Clearing his throat, he extends his sword, which I take, thanking him as I place the dish upon his now empty hand. Stepping back, I swing the weapon around, getting a feel for its balance. I frown, yet to find a sword I've immediately fallen in love with. "Too heavy for my hand." I jerk my chin at the dagger strapped around his thigh. "But I'll happily swap you for that. And the sheath." After a moment of pause, the guards share a look before the male sets the crockery on the ground, along with his spear. He unbuckles his sheath, and I first weigh the dagger's feel before surrendering my stolen sword. "Nice doing business with you," I say, winking. He clears his throat, stepping back into position with my dish on the ground between his feet. I notice a few beads of sweat now gathered on his brow. "Quick question." I set my candlestick bag on the ground and part my robe, easing up the hem of my shift so I can thread the leather strap around my hip and thigh. "You don't happen to feed folk to the dragons here, do you? In, say, I don't know, a giant, blood-soaked coliseum with a stake in the middle that's really uncomfortable to be tied to?" I cut a glance at both males who are casting each other wary looks. They shake their heads in unison, and my brows bump up. Interesting. "What about your young elementals? What happens to them?"
"They attend Drok Academy,"
the guard on the left announces in his thick northern accent, dipping his head. "And the gnolls?"
"They're given the option to discover if they have an affinity for the runes. If not, they may choose to study something else or gain an apprenticeship."
Huh? "Right," I say, head cocked to the side as I blindly thread another buckle. The doors shove open. The big shirtless male with fiery hair stands in the hallway beyond, arms crossed, brow raised.
"Harassing the guards?"
"Rather presumptuous of you."
"Your reputation precedes you."
He pokes his head out the door and looks left and right, as though checking we're all still in one piece. Mainly them. His emerald stare shifts between the dish on the ground, the guard's reddening cheeks, and my freshly donned weapon.
"I see you've managed to scam your way into being equipped. Quick work."
I drop my hem. "Hidden talent. What's yours?"
"Sweet fuck all."
He dashes his hand at the stairs that swoop toward the bouldered city below.
"Let's go."
My heart drops, frown returning. Am I not as free as I thought I was?
What did I do to deserve an escort?
He flicks me an up-and-down look, both brows raised.
You look like a tourist unaccustomed to the heat. If you're going to hawk off a solid gold candlestick, you might as well get a good deal. A merchant sees you with me, chances are they won't short you.
Actually, that's thoughtful. Though I wonder if he'd be so supportive if he knew I intended on swapping said candlestick for an armory's worth of saber-scythe scale blades.
Thank you. Unless they caught me tangled up with their daughters.
He tacks on, shrugging.
Or their sons. Then they'll probably refuse to do business with you altogether.
Creators. Weren't you in the middle of a game you should probably finish?
Yes, and I was getting my ass kicked. Grimm's lethal when he's in a shit mood, and my pride's already bruised. Besides, somebody stole our snacks, and the fucking brandy ran out.
Right. Guess I'm stuck with him. In that case, I say, bending down to snatch my bag off the ground. Shall we? He stuffs his hands in the pockets of his tight brown leather pants and leads the way, his long steps smooth and light despite his hulking size. The sun beats upon us like a distant blow of dragon flame, so I tuck my hood farther forward, casting my face in shadow, immediately easing the discomfort.
I'm Pyrok.
Rave, though I suspect you already knew that.
Correct.
He extends his left hand across his body toward me, pointer and middle finger outstretched, the others curled in. I frown at it, looking up into his eyes, then back at his hand again before I mimic the motion, our fingers meeting. He flashes me a half-smile that's so nonchalant it's infectious.
There you go.
I stab my stare down the stairs as we ease amongst the bouldered buildings clothed in more of the big, inky blooms Essie would have loved. That organ in my chest pangs, and I rub at the ache.
So, Rave, what sort of store were you hoping to dump that candlestick at?
A curly quill, if you have one. He casts me a sidelong look.
We do.
My eyes widen.
It's called that? The curly quill?
Parchment, pawn, and all your runy supplies,
he chimes, and relief bubbles through me, popping against my ribs, lightening my steps. I knew they were elsewhere. I just wasn't certain there would be one this far north. This is my lucky day.
You need a quill?
I do. Lots of quills with sharp, pointy ends honed enough to slit through all of Rex's important bits. Slowly. Painfully. Then I need a sweet drink and a good view, I tell him, moving the handles of my bag so they're resting on my shoulder, repressing the urge to scratch at the skin on the side of my nails that's starting to get a little raw.
Drink sounds like a premium part of the plan. What sort of view are you after?
Best you can find.
It's a big city. Figure if I have a view broad enough, I'll eventually work out where the Carter Hutch is without forcing any tongues to wag. Then I'll know where I need to go once I've liquidated this heavy golden asset and am packed with a lethal amount of weapons, toting a satchel full of those crispy black fruits Vea was eating. In front of me. Shard by crispy, watery shard. The muscles beneath my tongue tingle. If I leave this place without some, I'll never forgive myself. Rave. Chapter 51. The aurora sits low, edging toward the west as we move between rounded buildings the color of burnt clay. Urns sprout from the ground, gushing plants and trees and vines that climb all over the rich, organic city. Buskers perched within sloped corners, blowing tunes from copper flutes. We jostle through a bustle of folk clothed in garments that drape, pinch, and twist around their bodies like cleverly worn veils,
and I can't help but wonder if everyone in Dom has the same garment in brown, black, or rust and just wears it differently. A pin here, a clip there, a copper belt looped around the waist. Seems likely. Parchment larks flutter in the space above our heads, diving into the outstretched hands of smiling, laughing folk. Nobody appears starved, homeless, or has a clip in their ear. Not that I can see, anyway. Folk appear to enjoy existing here, I muse, watching two younglings dash after each other, their lilting giggles hitting the most beautiful notes. Two folk I suppose are their parents watch on from beneath a crooked tree, licking at dollops of something creamy-looking that's cradled within coiled black cones.
It's nice.
And I couldn't have been more wrong about this place. Pyrok cuts me a sideways glance.
I hear you lived in Gore until you were...
offered to the dragons?
Yes, that.
He pulls a flat gold token from his pocket and flicks it through the air, snatching it.
Have you traveled elsewhere?
There's an easy lightness in the way he hands me the question, but it still feels like catching an ember. I consider the cold journey north toward the wall after I finally escaped from... there. Consider the horrors I encountered. Fought. The loneliness that bit so deep it gouged bone. Just here, I say, batting the memories aside. Though I was mostly unconscious or inside Rygun's mouth, I wouldn't exactly call it sightseeing, unless you count the ball of flame in the back of his throat that kept threatening to incinerate me. A perfect reminder that this city may glow with a happy radiance, but its beautiful king still toted me around like a toothpick. Perfect reason not to fall too far in love with the place. And it's hot here. I hate the heat. And Rec needs to be skinned alive, cured, then used as a fucking floor rug. You seem to be taking me on a tour, I mutter, pointing at a tree that's woven its way around a building like a gnarled crown, boasting big, coppery blooms that look like flapping wings. I'm certain we passed that earlier, when the aurora was sitting much higher in the sky.
Relax,
Pyrok drawls, pausing by a market cart.
Unless you've got somewhere you need to be.
Not here. Not in this inviting, wholesome city where folk are too easy to be around. Too easy to want to be around. Too easy to grow attached to. There's always somewhere to be. What are you buying?
Molten mead.
He swaps his token for a terracotta mug ladled with a red-toned drink. He looks at me over his shoulder, brow popped.
Want one?
Maybe later. More small gold tokens glint in the sun as the merchant drops them in Pyrok's hand. His change, I assume. Pyrok threads in beside me, whistling to the sway of his steps, leading me on what I suppose will be another lap of our tour. Gold is your currency here?
Sure is.
He draws a deep sip from his mug, releasing a satisfied hiss.
This kingdom doesn't support the mining of fossilized dragon blood,
he says, a hardness to his tone that wasn't there before.
Mining it promotes spilling it.
My brows pinch together. Is it used here? For its medicinal purposes? He shrugs.
What finds its way into the city wasn't mined by folk under this kingdom's protection.
Interesting. I move around a busker plucking a pretty tune from a large emberwood string instrument that draws my eye. My ear. That makes me want to stop, sit, and listen. So the burn has untapped reserves of bloodstone? I ask, looking left, only to find Pyrok nowhere. Just gone, like the ground ate him up. I whip around, catching sight of his blaze of hair down a side alley, standing at least a head taller than everyone else. He waves a hand for me to follow without bothering to turn, and I roll my eyes, pushing through the throng to catch up.
Thanks for the warning, I mutter.
You got one. Not my fault you weren't paying attention.
He pauses, leaning against a wall clothed in more of those russet vines bearing the bold black flowers, one hand still in his pocket while he sips his mead with the other.
Through there,
he says with a jerk of his chin.
Tell Vron I say hi.
I spin, turning my attention to the wooden door of the domed building opposite him, an aged sign hanging from the awning. The curly quill, parchment, pawn, and all your runy supplies. I smile and grab the handle, pausing to glance over my shoulder. Need anything?
Not unless Vron's decided to stock brandy alongside his collection of bug wings,
he says, then takes a deep drag of his drink. Shaking my head, I shove into the rounded store, drawing the smell of leather and dust. I glance around the curved wall of shelves stacked with books, tinctures, etching sticks, and bits of volcanic rock. Saber-scythe tusks hang from the ceiling, suspended from lengths of copper chain, each bearing price tags that mean nothing to me since I'm not used to dealing in gold. Fingers crossed, this heavy lump of a thing I've been lugging around the city is worthy enough to fetch the supplies I need, hopefully with some coins left over so I can hire a carter back to the wall. I move through a labyrinth of shelves until I reach the back of the store, pinned with a mosaic of small, medium, and large bug wings, making me frown. Wonder where the armory is. My gaze lands on a male with wiry white hair that sticks out in all directions, presumably Vron. He's sitting behind a cluttered stone counter mixing tinctures, white and blue beads threaded through his rebellious locks. A line forms between his brows, and his hand stills, gaze lifting. His airy eyes cast my feet in stone and pitch my pulse. They're milky, like the souls. Such a contrast to his dark skin, and they're staring straight through me. My heart flops into my gut as something flashes to the forefront of my memory, like a piece of flesh thrown on a bed of flaming coals. A big pair of ivory eyes stare blankly in my direction, a blow of icy breath battering my face as a cold, luminous, leathery nose nudges my chest. My chest that's so full of love, so full of hurt, so much hurt.
Welcome to the Curly Quill,
a serrated voice says, snapping me back to the here, the now. Shoving the unsettling image toward my icy leg, I clear my throat, looking at the male, struggling to hold his milky stare.
Hi. I'm
here to hawk off a candlestick you stole from the Imperial Stronghold. I'm quite aware, Rave.
I frown, narrowing my gaze on the male's white robe, searching the many buttons down the front of his seam, seeing one that boasts a branded knot of threads. You're a mind weft, I murmur, my voice hitched in awe. I thought your lot were hunted and forced to work for the Imperial families.
Painfully aware,
Vron says, his voice like a scratchy string. He tips his head sideways, metal mixing stick held between his thumb and finger.
You, my dear, have a very interesting mind.
His words stuff me full of mortar, making my body feel heavy, laden.
There's a hidden depth packed with more hurts and secrets than I can count,
he says with a swift shake of his head.
How do you manage it?
I force my lungs full, convince them to work.
I ignore it, I rasp. Mostly.
Ah.
He sets the stick on a piece of folded cloth, wiry brows pinching together.
You've come for a flush of dragon scale blades, 6 iron ones, a bandolier, a handful of iron pins, regular size, and you'd like to be fitted with appropriate garb you can carry with you in a small, manageable bag to the Fade where you intend to hunt the bounty hunter Rex Aros.
Well, this is handy. Correct. I dip my head in respect of his abilities.
Quite a list.
Yes, well, I had a house fire. Lost too much. The vision of Essie, too still on the cedars, strikes me like a shiv between the ribs, and it's an effort not to flinch.
I can see that,
Vron tells me, his voice thick with emotion.
I'm sorry, Rave, for Essie. Regret is the heaviest burden to bear.
I turn my stare to the mosaic ceiling, the shelves, my hands.
I'm also sorry for your little knee. I know how hard it was to activate the return fold.
Your mental fishing rod is very good at catching things, I say with a forced laugh, pushing the shackle farther up my wrist to give my skin some room to breathe.
It is. I'm sorry. It's more a compulsion than a gift, I'm afraid.
A brief pause. Then,
you also want one of my metal mixing sticks to punch that iron cuff from your wrist.
I look up, brow lifting. His own is hitched in a quizzical arch.
An idea you got when you walked in here. You're going to pluck a stone from the shore and use it to tap the linchpin free.
He flashes me a mischievous smile that's immediately infectious. Think it'll work?
I do, though I have something more appropriate that won't bend beneath the pressure. You also want a few things off the shelves to maintain the vision that you came in here for regular supplies. I can help with that, too.
Thank you, I say, followed by another dip of my head. Pyrock says hi. He's right outside.
Tell him he needs to lay off the mead. Oh.
His eyes widen, then squint again, like he's peering through the folds of my brain.
I see why you brought the candlestick rather than make use of your reserves.
Yes, that. The Fir-Duath believes I'm dead. My page should state as such. I'd like to keep it that way. At least for